how can the Georgia Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program help nursing home residents? Stick around. Hey out there, welcome back to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. My name is Rob. I will be your host for this episode. And in today's episode, we are talking all about the Georgia Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program, what they do, who they are, how they can help nursing home residents, personal care home residents, basically long-term care residents all over the state of Georgia. We're going to have Melanie McNeil on here in a couple minutes. We're going to have an awesome conversation all about the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program here in the state of Georgia. But before we get into that, it's time for the Nursing Home Regulation Question of the Week. Under 42 U.S.C. 483.20, subsection H, which of the following must conduct or coordinate the resident's comprehensive assessment? Is it A, the admitting physician, B, the attending physician, or C, the registered nurse? Which of these must conduct or coordinate the resident's comprehensive assessment? The answer is C, the registered nurse. If you got that right, give yourself 20 points. Under the comprehensive care plan section of the regs, it is in fact the registered nurse that's going to oversee and coordinate all the different individual assessments of the NBS assessment. So if you got that right, good job. And what's that you say? Yes, it is actually time for everybody's favorite portion of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast, and that is the computer-generated nursing home regulation joke of the week. Let's see what ChatGPT has for us this week in the way of humor.
The ChatGPT-generated nursing home regulation joke of the week.
Skynet.
Under 42 U.S.C. 483.55, nursing homes must provide or arrange for routine dental care, because even smiles are regulated in this industry.
Ooh. ChatGPT, a scathing commentary about how regulated nursing homes are. Nah, that one's okay. Like, I can't get too mad at that one. All right, enough of that. Without further ado, let's get into the substance of the episode. Again, as I mentioned, we got Melanie McNeil on this week. Melanie McNeil is an attorney, and she is a part of the Georgia State Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program. Prior to taking on the role of State Long-Term Care Ombudsman, she was the manager of Medicaid and manager of Medicaid and Special Populations for Kaiser Permanente in Georgia. Melanie came to Kaiser Permanente from the National Association of State Units on Aging in Washington, D.C., where she was Director of Public Policy. Before moving to Washington, she spent 10 years with the Georgia Council on Aging, advocating on behalf of older adults with executive and legislative branches in Georgia. An honors graduate of Western Illinois University and a cum laude graduate of Georgia State University College of Law, which is where I got my law degree, Melanie is admitted to practice law in both Georgia and Colorado. And again, we are so happy to have her back on the show. Melanie, welcome to the show.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me.
All right. I guess I should say welcome back. We were talking off camera before the show that it has been a number of years since we've had you on the program to talk about the Ombudsman program in Georgia. And I'm so glad it's overdue. Glad to have you back. A lot of great questions that I want to ask you, a lot of information that I want to get from you. The first thing is, for any listeners that you know are new or don't feel like going back several years in our archive of episodes to find out what the long-term care ombudsman do, can you just kind of explain who you are, who the organization is, and what the mission is?
Sure. So I'm the state long-term care ombudsman. Every state, the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, and Guam have a state long-term care ombudsman and an ombudsman program. It's authorized by the Federal Older Americans Act. And in Georgia, there's also some state law related to the long-term care ombudsman program. We're advocates for people who live in long-term care facilities. And for us, that means nursing homes, personal care homes, assisted living, community living arrangement homes for individuals who have developed ICF IDDs is what we call them. And we visit regularly at those facilities, quarterly, actually, in most instances. There are approximately 88,817 facility beds in Georgia, so that's a lot of people. And we don't see them all the time. We don't. But we do try to visit at each of the facilities. So there's about 369 nursing homes and 2,000 and some, and I don't have the right number for the other kind of entities. So we try to just be at the facility. We talk with residents. We try to find out how things are going. Lots of facilities are good facilities and they provide good care for the residents and they don't have complaints. Sometimes, when people live together, if somebody's going to have an issue, it might not even be that it's the facility issue. It might be a roommate issue because often, especially in nursing homes, people have a roommate. And so, but sometimes, it's personal preference kinds of things. Like, I don't like fried chicken. Can you help me so that I don't have to have fried chicken? Or I don't want to get up as early as they want me to get up. It can be things like that, but it can also be more serious things. They're not giving me the right medication, or I'm not getting it on time, or I need to go to the doctor and I can't seem to get the transportation arranged. It runs the gamut from not so hard to fix to facilities that are, problems that are more complicated.
That's why I love this show, is because I get to learn so much. This is something that I didn't realize, is that, talk to me more about the regular visits to the nursing homes, because I was under the mistaken impression that the ombudsman basically visited upon a complaint or upon the desire of the resident. But it sounds to me like you're saying that a part of your everyday process is to go to the nursing homes, even if you haven't heard from anybody. So tell me more about that. How does that work, and what are, I guess, the rounds, so to speak, of how that
Right.
happens?
Sure. Well, first of all, what I should tell you is I work at the state office. And so through the Department of Human Services, which is where our office is located, we contract with six nonprofit agencies. And those nonprofit agencies hire what are described as ombudsman representatives. They're representing my office. So, and they're assigned different areas. So the state's divided into six areas. And those ombudsman representatives are assigned the facilities in their area. And they are part of their contract says they need to visit at each facility in their assigned area at least once a quarter. We've had some issues with keeping staff. And so, in some areas, especially if there haven't been any complaints, they might not visit quarterly. But generally, when we're fully staffed, our folks just make a visit every quarter. Now, your listeners may not be aware that nursing homes usually have at least 100 people, 100 residents, sometimes fewer, but and sometimes they have more than that. So when an ombudsman representative visits, they're not going to see everybody in that nursing home. But they'll walk the halls, or what they might do is if it's a big nursing home, in one quarter they might walk on the A hall and visit with the residents on the A hall. And the next time they go, they'll visit the residents on the B hall. In the next quarter, those on the C hall. So they're trying to see most of the residents at least once a year, just to talk to them, just to check in, just to let them know we're available. Some facilities, personal care homes especially, can be pretty small. And so our ombudsman representatives might see those residents every time they go. It just depends. So our ombudsman representatives are sometimes in facilities more often than quarterly if we get complaints. And a lot of facilities will have someone who has a complaint. Some facilities we don't. The people are they're they figure out for themselves how to fix the problems, and so they don't call us to ask us for help. But most facilities will get a call from time to time from the resident themselves or from their family, just saying something doesn't seem right, or my mom or my dad, something's not right for them, so we'd like you to take a look.
That's great. So it's almost though, when we're talking about these quarterly visits, it's like outreach. It's like, you might not need me now, but here's my card. Here's who I am. If you do need me, you can call me. I think that's fantastic. So it's a consistent reminder that there is a resource for these residents, of nursing homes and personal care homes and et cetera. Can you walk me through what are and you mentioned obviously interpersonal issues, perhaps roommate issues, but what and medication issues, but what are some of the typical, like some of the more typical issues that your office and the resources that your offices provides are resolving or attempting to resolve for these residents?
Well, our number one complaint, and I've been the ombudsman since 2010, so the number one complaint all the years I've been the state ombudsman is involuntary discharge. Usually that's nursing homes. And some of the time, the reason for that involuntary discharge is that there's a problem with the facility getting paid. Sometimes families don't understand that even if their loved one is in the nursing home and Medicaid is helping to pay for their long-term care, that they still have to, the resident still has to make a payment too. Sometimes families don't understand that. And so, and facilities have to get paid. They can't stay open if they don't get paid. And so that's our number one complaint, and we try and help resolve that. So we help residents understand, you have to pay something, and help their families understand, you have to pay something. That's part of the rules. That's our number one complaint. But another very often complaint is not getting requests for assistance are not answered. So, we hear from residents is, well, I put my call light on and the CNA came and said, I'll be back in a minute, and then they never come back. Or they don't respond to the call light at all. It just stays on. And part of the reason we think that happens is that sometimes facilities just don't have enough staff. And so, they're the direct care workers are trying to help everybody. And so, sometimes they give short shrift to the ones that are just asking for some assistance, like, I can't reach my water. I'd like to have some water, or I don't have any water. Could I have some water? Or sometimes, we hear this from residents who need assistance with going to the bathroom. And that's a kind of a complicated and time-consuming process. And so what happens sometimes is the CNA may be well-meaning, yes, I'll come back, but they don't. And that's that, that's a dignity and respect issue. That's a care issue. That's a skin breakdown issue. I mean, there's lots of things involved with that. And so we try, if we get that complaint, we go to the facility. If we get the resident's permission, then we try and work with the facility on, doing a better job. We don't have any enforcement power. We can't make a facility do the right thing. That goes through the Department of Community Health. They're the enforcers and the regulators. But a lot of times, facilities will work with us because they'd rather not have the regulators in the building, because what could happen? They might find not only that there's a problem with not answering the call lights, but there might be some other issues. And so it's helpful if we can work with the facility and get them to fix the problem. And a lot of times they will. A lot of times they will.
Let's take, for example, that second category of the most prominent or the most likely calls that you're going to get, and which is responses to call lights, which can lead to a whole bunch of other different negative outcomes potentially. Can you walk me through what your office, what the individual ombudsman might do in these particular situations? I would imagine that there's like a protocol, like, well, okay, we've seen this so many times that here's the first approach we'll have, second approach. Can you just walk me through how a call light dignity issue might be handled by the ombudsman to resolve the issue?
Well, first of all, we have to have resident permission. So whether the resident calls us and says, my call light doesn't work, we still have to say, so is it okay for us to take some action and here's some ideas? Sometimes it's a family member or a friend or someone else who calls and says, the call lights aren't being answered. So we would go and talk to the residents and see if anyone would give us permission. So then what we might do is, first of all, funny you should mention this because I had an email just this week about a facility that had put in a new call light system, but they didn't put the call light system in every resident's room. And so the ombudsman got a call, oh, I don't have a call light in my room. And lo and behold, as the ombudsman was, going through the facility, she was identifying there were a number of those. So of course we have to have the resident permission, but then we would go, it depends on what department. So in this instance, we'd probably go to the administrator, because it's probably the administrator that's sort of overseeing this. to say, hey, you don't have colleagues in all the rooms. Oh, okay. So they'll fix that. For some, if the colleague is in the room and they're not answering the call light, what our ombudsman would do, again, with permission from the resident, they might say, okay, put the call light on. Let's see how long it takes them to react. So sometimes it's 10 minutes, sometimes it's 20 minutes, sometimes it's a half hour. And you might be thinking, well, can the ombudsman representative really spend that time? But we do because, sometimes problems just take time to resolve. And then the ombudsman representative, again, with permission from the resident, might again go to the administrator or to the director of nursing, because the director of nursing kind of oversees the direct care workers and say, I was in this room for the last 30 minutes. The resident put the call light on right when I went into the room and nobody came. So what's going on? This isn't acceptable. You know that. Oh, well, then the director of nursing will, tell us what action she's going to take. It's a somewhat chronic problem. So, it might get solved for a while for that resident or maybe for some other residents. It's like a lot of things. You start doing better and then, well, not so good. And then, you're back to square one. I think that's the reason it's a common problem. It gets fixed for a while. Every resident has the right to tell us how to approach it. So if that resident said, no, I don't want you talking to the DON, I don't have a good relationship with the director of nursing, I don't want you talking to them, but I do want this fixed. So we might go to the administrator then and say, well, this resident has raised this concern. Or the resident might say, you know what? I'm very worried about what's going to happen. So I want you to know about this problem, but I'm not going to give you permission to take action yet. I'm a little worried about, whether there might be retaliation. Although residents don't often say it that way. They might say, I'm afraid. I'm not so sure I want you to do anything because I'm kind of afraid. So then we would go back maybe in another week or two and say, oh, is it any better? Well, no. Okay. Well, could I help you with it? Sometimes if a resident is reluctant, we might say, again, with permission from the so we might say to a resident, I helped Mary Smith down the hall from you. Because she had an issue. And she told me it was okay to tell you that we successfully resolved her problem. Oh, well, if you could do that for Mary, I guess you could do it for me. So sometimes part of the reason we visit regularly is that people get to know us and they understand what we do and they trust us. Sometimes it helps if we can say, we helped your neighbor down the hall. And so, they know that neighbor and then they'll, be more willing to trust us. But the bottom line is, and we all know this, ombudsman representatives are only in the building for a certain amount of time. We're not there all day. We're not there overnight. We're not even there to weekly, usually. And so we know residents are concerned about, whether the CNA is going to be mad because they mentioned there's a problem. So, we just kind of try, we work with the resident to see if we can figure out a way to resolve the problem so that they don't feel afraid and that the staff, we're not trying to call out particular staff. We're just trying to get the right care for the resident.
It sounds like to me what you're saying is that the method of resolution employed by the ombudsman is to almost act as the mediator, an independent party between the resident and the facility to say, hey, we're not blaming you. We're not saying this is being done on purpose, but what can we do to achieve what the resident wants within the rights that the resident has as being a resident of a facility? So that's really interesting. It's like you have to be able to communicate in a way that both the resident and the facility want to hear and would execute change. So I think that's really interesting.
Well, but I should correct you. We're not really the mediator. And the reason I say that is we're going to advocate on behalf of the residents. So we want to work with the facility to, make things happen correctly. But, if we need to call them out, we're going to call them out,
Sure.
So, but as the saying goes, you get better results with honey than with vinegar. And so, trying not to be, I don't know if aggressive is the right word, but trying to say to the facility, look, here's the problem, and we just want to resolve it. So what can we do to
Right.
resolve it?
Right. Thank you for correcting that. Yeah, you're right. And I guess I guess one of my point would be that you have to walk a very fine line. I'm sure that's very difficult to understand that the resident has fears of retaliation, or maybe not retaliation in a terrible sense, but you don't want to be a snitch, I guess, and but you want to get your issue taken care of, and then you have to go and you have to walk the fine line of how do I approach this with the facility without them getting aggressive with me or you just resolving the issue. So I can see how that can be very difficult for the ombudsman. You mentioned something very interesting to me, which is the word authority, like what authority the long-term care ombudsman have to force or to make the nursing home do something. But also you've continued to mention we get permission from the resident. Can you explain, is there anything that the ombudsman can do that the normal citizen couldn't do if they had permission from the resident? In other words, is the ombudsman under your mandate, are you allowed to walk into the administrator's office when the normal person couldn't? Or is there anything that you can think of that an ombudsman can do that a normal person, not normal, but a non-ombudsman could do?
Right. Well, we under the federal and state law, we have access to residents and they have access to us anytime, day or night. Where a family member might encounter the facility, will say, you know, we have set visiting hours and the visiting hours are from 8 until 4. So if you want to visit with your resident, you come between 8 and 4. Well, state law says we should try and visit during, you know, sort of normal business hours. But if the complaint is we have a problem at 10 o'clock at night, we have authority to go into the building at 10 o'clock at night. They can't keep us out. So that's a difference that we have. As it relates to resolving a problem, probably the difference between us and a family member or a friend who comes to visit is that we've seen a lot of issues. And so we have a, sorry, so we have a maybe a better idea of what might work and what wouldn't work, or what's causing a problem, more than just someone who, you know, just put their mom in a personal care home, for example, and you know, they're just whole new to the whole process. So, you know, that's probably something that we can do that a normal citizen can't.
Sure, that makes sense.
And part of the reason we visit regularly too is so that the facility gets to know us. And so that they.
That was the actually that's that thank you for saying that, because that was going to be my next question is, so on the regular rounds, and I don't even know what the right term of art is for rounds, but on the quarterly visits, and the, more often than that, is it important for the ombudsman to obviously to not only make themselves known to the residents, but what are they doing in terms of building relationships with the actual administration of the facility, if any?
Yeah, so we're required to let the administrator or the person in charge know when we come to a facility. And so it might be that the administrator comes out and greets us. The administrator might say, oh, you know what? Mary Smith's been having an issue, or we have a concern about John Jones. You know, so they might tell us that. Sometimes we have to remind facilities that even though they've made us aware, we can't talk to them about it. Like we might go and visit with those residents, but we can't talk with them about that visit unless the resident gives us permission. So, but often we're talking with the director of nursing if it's a care issue, or we're talking to the social worker if it's an issue related to, you know, more social things like residents have the right to leave. And that's probably more of a social worker issue. We might be talking to the social worker about, you know, how it might be possible for, let's say it's Mary Jones who wants to get outside and she's in a wheelchair. So, but it doesn't seem like she's having much luck getting outside. Maybe she needs a power wheelchair. So we might, if that's what Mary wants, we might advocate with a social worker about how can we get Mary Smith a power wheelchair. So we might be talking to the social worker about that. We might be talking to the dietary folks if there seems to be a problem with the food. Like if the resident tells us, you know, I'm not supposed to have dairy products and they keep giving me dairy products and I don't eat them, but you know, they shouldn't even be giving them to me. So we might go talk to the dietary director. So we do want to build relationships with facilities so that they know we're not going to come in guns blazing. We're going to come in saying, you know, here's a problem and it's been a continuing problem and you've told us you were going to fix it and you haven't. So come on. You know, I don't, We do what we can. And then if the issue doesn't get resolved, the state law says, then we can refer it to the regulators. And we do. We do it when we need to.
And when we say regulators, that would be the Department of Community Health, the Healthcare Facility Regulation Division.
Yes.
So is, I mean, I guess, are the ombudsman ever like, hauled into court, like to testify? Like, does that ever happen? Like, is anybody subpoenaed or do you go into hearings?
We do sometimes get subpoenas, and most of the time, we've only had a few of those. And when we have, we usually try to quash them
Right.
because most of the time, other people have been witness to whatever the issue is. Or if a resident asks us to be there, so if there's an involuntary discharge hearing, and the resident asks us to be there, to be present. We sometimes do that if we have the time, if we can do it. But again, most of the time, we're not really needed. Someone else can testify, someone else can be a support person. What we try not to do is get involved in situations where someone else is making the decision, and we've had, even if it's a tangential part, then people are thinking like a guardianship issue. We don't get involved in guardianship issues. Because we don't want residents to think we're part of taking their rights away. And so when people ask us, we say, no, sorry, we can't participate in that process. Other people can testify to the residents' abilities or disabilities. You don't need us. And so, yeah, if we're subpoenaed, most of the time we try to not have to.
This is all fantastic information. So, other than if you're a nursing home resident or a family member of a nursing home resident, other than just waiting for that quarterly visit, what are the ways that someone can reach out to the Georgia Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program?
Well, first of all, every facility, personal care home, assisted living, nursing home, should have our poster. And ombudsman is kind of a funny word, but the posters all have ombudsman at the top. And they're red and gray and white, and they're pretty big. And it has our contact information. So for family members or friends who are coming to visit, look for that ombudsman poster, see if you can find it. When our folks make their routine visits, they leave a brochure that has their name and phone number on it. So if your loved one doesn't have a brochure, it might be that it got lost, but a neighbor might, someone in the next room might have it, or roommate might have it. We also have a website. We're not on social media otherwise, but we have a website. It's www dot, and then it's Georgia spelled out, and then ombudsman, which is a hard word, but it's just, you spell it just the way it sounds. OM, buds, BUDS, sorry, BUDS, man, MAN. So GeorgiaOmbudsman.org. And people can contact us confidentially on the website, or they can give us all the information. They could say, I'm the daughter of Mary Smith. Here's my phone number. She's got a problem. Here's what it is. It's all confidential. We're the only ones who see it. Nobody else on our website can see that. And so people can contact us that way. And then what we do is route that person to the ombudsman representative for that area. I should also mention there's an 800 number. So it's 866-552-4464. And you just have to wait. I think it's option five. It'll say, if you want help with food stamps, if you want help with Medicare. But if you just wait, I think we're option five. And that will get people in touch with us.
Thank you so much, Melanie. That's great information. We really appreciate you once again coming back on the show to share what the Long-Term Care Ombudsman do in Georgia.
Could I just say one last thing?
Sure, absolutely.
I just encourage everyone who knows someone in a long-term care facility, go and visit.
That's great advice. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for thinking of me. Thanks for having me on. And so yeah, good luck with everything, Rob. And call me or let me know if you have issues or if you know about people in facilities that are having issues, just let me know and we'll see what we can do.
Certainly will. Thank you, Melanie, so much.
Thanks, Rob. Bye.
I feel like sometimes when talking to people like Melanie, it's like she does more for the aging population in this state than I do in years and years. And I just, it's hats off to her for her years of advocating on behalf of individuals living in long-term care in the state of Georgia. We just immense respect for what she does. Well, that's going to complete the episode this week, everybody. I hope that you're enjoying the soft reboot, the relaunch of the Nursing Home Abuse podcast. We hope to continue to bring this to you every week. Again, you can get this podcast on YouTube, on our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. But wherever you get your podcast from, hopefully this will be published at least once every week. New episodes every Monday. And with that, folks, we'll see you next time. Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal or medical advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes, for now, are available every other Monday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.